Hi, everyone. My name is Natalie Gochner, and this is Both Sides of the Aisle. I represent the Political Center. This is a special edition, but on the political left, we have Shireen Gourbani.
Hello, and hey, listeners. Glad you're sticking with us.
And Shireen, why is it special?
So we have Governor Gary Herbert with us, and we are so honored that you took a little bit of time out of your schedule to come and talk about just your political background, what brought you into politics, what you're doing now. And I'm interested to ask you some questions about the Republican Party, but we'll get to all that. Thank you for joining us.
Well, I'm honored to be here with both of you. So I'm anxious to see what the questions are going to be.
Okay.
See if I've got answers.
Well, I'll start with one. I'm wondering if you could talk a little bit about if you grew up in a really political family, did you have an inkling towards politics early in your life?
You know, I grew up in a family that cared about their community and in various ways contributed to the community, whether in the Chamber of Commerce or working with business people. And we all voted. My family all voted. So, but nobody ran for office until later in life. My dad ran for the Orem City Council.
Oh, wow.
And lost.
Oh.
and were you living in Orem at the time?
Yes,
okay,
I was.
Okay, so he had a political father that lost.
Yes.
Okay, I didn't know this.
Lost. And actually, my first foray into politics was the run for the Orem City Council, too.
Yeah.
I thought, well, and I did pretty good up through the primaries. And then I lost in the finals in November by about 36 votes. Oh. So my dad and I had that in common.
Yeah.
Interesting. Shireen, I got to know Governor Herbert initially when he was a county commissioner in Utah County.
Oh, yeah.
So you must have lost for Orem Council, but you won for commissioner.
Yeah, it was an interesting thing. Whoever thought I was going to go into politics, I can tell you I didn't. Yeah. And nobody that knew me did. I was pretty shy in high school and college. I didn't raise my hand a lot. My outlet was sports. I got my social interaction was with athletics.
A really good athlete, Shireen, if you didn't know that.
What variety? What sport?
Well, I played quarterback on the football team, and I point guard on the basketball team and captain, and third base and pitch on the baseball team.
You get the picture.
I get the
quarterback,
picture.
Quarterback, point guard, third base, and also a great tennis player. So
I didn't take that up later in life. I didn't take up tennis until I was 28, and when I was 36, I was number one in the state. So not to be bragging, the good players weren't.
No brag, it's okay.
The good players weren't playing in the tournament, so you got to play in the tournament to get a ranking.
Yeah.
So I did that, and then took up golf when I went into politics, which was when I was 42.
Perfect fit.
42, 43 years of age there. Yeah. So
you come from I also feel like you might come from a little bit of a musical family.
Well, my mother was really very talented. She never had really any piano lessons, but she was born with a gift of perfect pitch. Mm. So she self-taught on the piano and the organ and could just play by ear.
That's incredible.
She could hear it. She could play it.
Yeah.
And you came from a big family?
I have six brothers and sisters on one side, and I have my parents were divorced when I was young, about four or five. Mm-hmm. And I have three siblings on the other side.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
So, Governor Herbert, you have this history of, you know, being a small business owner, being a county commissioner, being a lieutenant governor, serving honorably as our governor. You've told us that this is an improbable journey. Put a little bit of words or color commentary to that.
Well, because I was shy, I was kind of an underachiever in, I think, some ways. I scored very high on the ACT test when I went into BYU, and also I had some talent, some capabilities, but just, you know, going out and saying, pick me, that's about as egotistical as you can get. But I got involved because I had a really successful real estate company, and then the 80s happened.
Mm-hmm.
And we ended up having mortgage money. It was at 16 to 16.5%. Primary, it was at 22 to 22.5%, and it just killed the real estate market.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Tough recession.
I mean, we think it's tough now because we've got about 7% interest. We'll try more than double that. And so I was really having a hard time making it. And I got started lobbying the state legislature. I was put on the board of directors for the National Association of Realtors and lobbying in Congress in Washington, D.C. And I just got really kind of upset and angry about lack of anything happening. And government was kind of messing things up.
Yeah.
And so one day I was complaining and somebody said to me, well, if you think you can do better, why don't you run for office?
Yeah.
And I said, you know what? I couldn't do any worse. And so that's how I got into politics. And I ran
for Orem. These are the best kinds of politicians because they run for purpose and reason. You did this.
Yeah. I've been down this road.
It really was about the economy. And I ran for Orem City Council.
Yeah.
And I lost by 36 votes. There was like 13 or 14 of us running.
Yeah.
And I lost disappointingly, but I had attracted some attention, and I had some people come and say, you know what? If you really want to get into politics, you ought to think about running for the county commission.
Yeah.
And my predecessor there was going to resign to run for Congress.
Oh.
And so I really had no idea of running for office or being in politics or having that as my future job. But I was so angry that I thought, you know what? I'm going to try that. I already got through filling the city council. It's not hard for me to just convert to, let's go countywide here.
Yeah.
And it was a special election because somebody had resigned. So it's all about delegates in that time. And so I think it was about 400 to 500 delegates in the county.
Yeah.
And I was a smaller number to kind of work with. And lo and behold, in this case, there's only 12 running for office, and I ended up getting selected.
So can you think about what were some of the challenges that were facing Utah County? And what year was that?
Let's see, that'd be 1990. I ran for Utah County Commission, 12 of us. I got selected, and I actually, that's my first victory.
Yeah.
And then I went 10-1. I lost the first one and then 10 more.
But so what were some of the big challenges?
Issues, well, the real estate market, interest rates were too high. And the foundation for the American dream is real estate.
Yeah.
Owning your own home or at least having a roof over your head.
Yep.
Private property rights are sacred to me and to a lot of people. And so the economy was a big deal.
Yep.
That's what we had, Signetics. If you remember Signetics, it was our first high-tech companies in Orem, and it was closing.
Okay.
Moved to New Mexico. And so one of my first things was an SOS, Save Our Signetics.
Oh, yeah.
SOS. And it was about the economy and what we needed to have opportunities for our young people. I coined the phrase that quality of life does not include having to export your children.
Yeah.
And we were doing that. If they want to go outside of Utah or someplace else because they have a desire to expand their horizon, fine.
Yeah.
But it shouldn't be you have to go
because
there's no opportunities here. So that was really my mantra. And as it turned out, it caught on, and we did pretty good about resurrecting Utah County's economy.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the forerunner to Silicon Slopes.
It's really interesting to me. I grew up in North Dakota, where there's a huge export of young people. There just really aren't a lot of jobs for individuals who are, I mean, I think if you want to work in the oil field, right? But even folks.
The Balkans up there.
Yeah. But even folks that wanted to stay in agriculture or in farming, there are fewer and fewer opportunities to stay in that state. Yeah.
So, Shireen, I'll make an observation about Governor Herbert that we'll get your comment on, Governor. But you have, if I had to characterize your leadership, and you and I have worked closely for so many years, but you have led the state through several recessions and really been someone who's picked your decisions based on the lens of the economy.
Yeah.
And where, you know, you can see that he did that when he was county commissioner, but when he was governor, he came in during the Great Recession and had a really big challenge ahead of him.
Yeah.
That's true. And of course, was it Bill Clinton that said it's the economy stupid?
Yeah.
He also had COVID.
Yeah, also COVID.
So, and there was a COVID recession.
That was a great recession, and I ended up my last year with COVID.
Yeah.
So I booked in some really bad times. But the economy really is the foundation of good quality of life.
Yeah.
If you don't have job opportunities, your quality of life suffers dramatically.
Yeah.
And that means also energy. So one of the first things I did when I was governor was to put together a 10-year energy plan where we could be self-sufficient as much as we could as a state.
Yeah.
And, you know, we have now the healthiest, most diverse economy in America. We are exporters of energy. We now have a lot of challenge because people want to come to Utah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's great quality of life here and job opportunities and be with your kids. And so now the biggest challenge we face is growth.
Yeah.
Where do we go and where
what
do we
are a couple of lessons you've learned through all of this that you would highlight for our listeners, something that, you know, would apply even today?
Well, I've always said that the toughest thing in life is communication. And politicians, that really is all about communication, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Some are good at it. Some are really bad at it. We wonder why do they act the way they do, like a fifth grade food fight, you know? So communication is a challenge for all of us in whatever our walk of life is, whether it's husbands and wives communicating, parents to children,
Communities?
A community, business people, the chambers of commerce. I mean, how we get along, how we act as good neighbors, pastors to their flock, you know, in religion, and politicians to constituents. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And you've got to be able to convince people that you know what you're doing and see if you can lead them. Sometimes we end up wanting to have a dictatorship, mm-hmm. and some try it, and maybe a benevolent dictator is not a bad way to go. Mm-hmm. And I volunteer for that job.
Okay.
Yeah. But I hearken to Ronald Reagan. Everybody, whether you agree with him or not, his policies, but he sat down with Tip O'Neill and says, hey, you know, buddy, we're going to be together here for a few years.
Yep.
What's on your mind, and what can we do to help you, and what can we do together?
Yeah.
And he got Democrats and Republicans all talking about, well, why don't we have a tax cut? Now, when was the last time that happened?
Yeah.
Both sides of the aisle. That's happened, and a major tax cut, 75% down to 38.
Yeah.
I mean, that's leadership. Mm-hmm. And that's what we ought to strive for, is to bring people together and bring them along.
Yeah.
And that's not easy.
No.
It takes hard work, and you've got to have some patience and some understanding. I took that page out of Reagan's book, and so when I became governor, I met with the Democrats once a week. And we talked about what's on your mind, what can I do to help you, what are your issues. And I found out that for virtually every issue, the outcomes we desire are about the same.
Yes.
I want to have a good education system. I want to have a healthy economy. I want to have jobs for our young people.
Clean air.
Yeah, clean air, environmental issues, and less crowded streets. Yeah. I mean, infrastructure, water for Utah. I mean, there's a lot of things that all fit in there about what can we do together, and here's the outcomes we need to have. We sometimes disagree on how we get from point A to point B.
Totally. Yes, totally, you know? Agree.
And that's the role of government. Yep. You like too much or too little, want redistribution of the wealth.
Yeah.
I mean, all those things play into getting together. And sometimes, you know, it's nice to compromise. Yeah. And our founding fathers did that. I mean, our Constitution was called by Thomas Jefferson a bundle of compromise.
Yeah.
And yet today, back in Washington, it's like, ooh, compromise.
Yeah.
Ooh,
yeah.
I'm turning to the dark side.
Let's take a short break. And when we come back, we want to talk to you a little bit about the Republican Party, where it's at today and where you think it's headed. Okay. Let's take a short break. We're with Governor Gary Herbert, Natalie Gochner, and Shireen Gorbani. You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on UPR. We love to hear from listeners like you. If you would like to send us a comment, email BSOTAPodcast@gmail.com. That's BSOTAPodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.
Shireen Gorbani on the left.
Natalie Gochner in the political center. This is Both Sides of the Aisle, and we have Governor Gary Herbert in studio with us. Governor Herbert, welcome.
Thank you. Honored to be with
We've
you
had
both.
A nice first segment, and now our second segment. We want to do a few things. We want to talk about your institute at Utah Valley University, but before we do that, let's talk about the Republican Party, Governor. You and I share an ideological foundation of conservatism. I believe in free markets, limited government. I like to be really frugal with the public purse. I believe in a strong national defense. What am I missing?
No, I think you're hitting most of the highlights.
Balanced federalism.
Yeah.
But we're sitting here in a situation now where parts of the Republican Party I almost don't recognize, Governor.
Well, traditional conservatism really is what I think I am, too, and I think most people really are. Mm-hmm. And there's, you know, Ronald Reagan said famously, if you agree with me 80% of the time, you're my friend.
Yeah.
And now we have, you can maybe disagree on 1 out of 100, but if you get to 2 out of 100, we disagree on you, throw the bum out and bring in somebody else.
Yeah, compromise, a stunning difference.
Not, yeah, and it's just like my way or the highway. It's like a badge of honor that I can't get along with anybody.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've become more of a populist, the Republican Party, I think, in many ways. Mm-hmm. Certainly the current administration is more authoritarian. Mm-hmm. And so it's not really a traditional conservative. I'm, for example, I think conservative thought means free trade.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I mean, it's a fair trade. I get it. But I don't want to be an isolationist.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
Yet we have some in the Trump administration that say, you know what, let's just stay within ourselves. Mm-hmm. Tariffs, what's going on there, not really a conservative thought. I'm kind of a Milton Friedman economist. Uh-huh. And I think most conservatives tend to fall in his line of thinking with the economy.
How would that translate into a policy for you?
Well, for example, when I came into office, one of the things we want to do is come out of the Great Recession. And one of the things we figured that we could do well was international trade.
Yeah.
You know, we speak 130 languages here in Utah. We're the most bilingual place on the planet.
Yeah.
And we're business people. We are self-starters. We have Money Magazine calls us the epicenter of small business. And guess what? You can't be a large business if you're not first a small business.
Right.
So we want to put more business
resources
in the hopper.
Yeah.
And so going out internationally, where we speak 130 languages, the LDS missionary program is really a boon to us.
Yeah.
We have people who spend 2 years of their lives in a foreign land, learn the culture, learn the language, and come home loving the people.
Yeah.
We're built for international trade. And so with Lou Kramer, my good friend, was at the World Trade Center, we expanded international trade. We expanded more than any state in America.
Yeah. Did you serve a mission?
I did.
Abroad? Or?
In Pennsylvania. That's where I met Orrin Hatch.
That's probably
where I got interested in politics.
Yeah.
But Orrin was an up-and-coming attorney there in the area of Pittsburgh. And I was a missionary there, and I should see him at church.
Oh, how interesting.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
The way they,
yeah.
That's the social capital of the LDS faith,
yeah.
You know, reaching out.
And I said, Orrin Hatch followed me home to Utah, because I was released in November of 68, came home to Utah, and then 69, Orrin moved to Utah.
That's incredible. And,
Governor, I'll make the observation that Utah has been able to keep a strong hold on conservatism, unlike some places in the country, but I do feel it's being threatened. And I just wanted you to comment on that. So when I say that, what I mean is that our legislature's amazing in that they're, and the governor, you know, that they're balancing the budget, that they're still investing in the future, that we have a line item veto. I think that's a conservative principle that, you know, the U.S. government doesn't have that. I feel like our state has navigated these populist waters quite well, but I do think some things are fraying, and I just would love to hear you speak to that.
Well, I think things, I don't know if fraying is the right term I would use. I think things are, you know, we have differences of opinion on what road to go down. We have a hard time coming together.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, again, lack of leadership.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's calling people names that disagree. You know, Nikki Haley was a friend of mine in South Carolina, elected twice as governor, and then President Trump appointed her to be the ambassador of the United Nations. She decides to run for president. She's got all the qualification in the world, and she jumps in the race. The next thing you know, President Trump's calling her bird brain.
Right.
I don't get that. I don't understand that.
Yeah.
And why
or
we...
Or calling a reporter Miss Piggy recently.
Why were we using insult? Like I say, like a fifth grade food fight.
Yeah.
And so...
But my point is that we're not doing that in Utah.
Is we are.
Okay.
Some of the members of your party are.
Yeah. Okay. Let's
we're not.
No,
here.
You aren't. You aren't.
But,
neither of you are.
But, you know, we've got an element that says you can't compromise, and if you don't agree with me on every issue, then I'm not going to support you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we have the delegate system itself leads to more extremism on both the left and the right.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just it's a little different system. And as we get larger and more populated, you know, we have a hard time finding places for people to go to even have caucus meetings.
Mm-hmm.
And delegate and conventions. So who knows what that's going to evolve to, but it's got its own pluses and minuses.
Yeah, so I wanted to ask about kind of this notion of how we bridge, because we actually met pretty recently at UVU, where Senator Mark Kelly and Senator John Curtis, your institute had invited them to speak. And I don't think we can talk about that without mentioning that part of the reason was because of the assassination of Charlie Kirk there on that campus and Gabby Giffords, Senator Mark Kelly's wife, who was also a victim of gun violence, continues, you know, to live, but is fundamentally changed from that experience.
Shot in the head. Six others were killed.
Yes, correct. But you brought them together there to have this conversation through difference, right? Through difference of opinion. And there were some small moments that stood out to me, and in particular was the conversation around gun violence. It was interesting to see how much common ground there really was when it came to thinking about reasonable gun policy. I'm wondering if you can talk a little bit about that experience and what you're hoping to do with your institute there.
Well, I think the opportunity to hear and discuss issues and hear all sides of an issue, sometimes we say both sides, there's probably more than two.
Usually.
And so that's what university studying, college study is about, is kind of expose yourself to different ideas and thoughts and help you decide what the way you want to live your life. And certainly I don't know if anybody's ever done this in Utah, where I'm actually affiliated with the Utah Valley University. I don't get paid anything for it, but I help bring in people. I've raised $8 million to help come up with an endowment to keep it going into the future. And I believe in the cause. That's why I'm doing it. And governors know a lot of people.
Yeah.
So if you think about it, we brought in Mike Pence, the vice president, twice. Paul Ryan, Speaker of the House. Art Laffer mentioned it earlier. He's been there and probably twice now. We have a lot of people. We had Scott Walker, former governor of Wisconsin, ran for president here just a week or so ago. Ben Carson, Secretary HUD was there. Again, a remarkable story of an African-American raised by his mother, who had a third grade education, single mom, and goes on to become a brain surgeon.
Yeah.
You know, and yet he talks about his challenges being raised and his anger and how he learned how to control his anger and all. Again, very inspirational. So we're doing things like that. We host debates.
Yeah.
In 2024, we hosted the debates for all the statewide offices through the Herbert Institute. And we had them two or three different places and locations.
Yeah.
So bringing in and doing some research. We just researched on, can you trust elections?
Yeah.
Can you trust the numbers? Because everybody's casting doubt upon that now. And I see other studies being done. We can trust the elections. The numbers are there. And this idea that we're gaming the system is just not accurate.
Yeah. Governor, in the conversation with Senator Curtis and Senator Kelly about bridging differences, what's something you learned from that conversation?
Well, I think if we think about it, we probably have a lot in common. We have a lot more in common than we have in differences. And we sometimes approach it just the reverse. One difference is one difference too many. Mm-hmm. And you think, gee, there's all these different issues out there. I know that working with the Democrats in Utah, and I don't think it's much different probably and even in Congress, but some. But we in the House, most of the legislation is passed on a bipartisan basis, virtually unanimously, probably nearly 80% of the time. And the Senate's even higher. Probably 85 to 90% of all the bills that pass, and that's like over 500, pass unanimously.
Yeah.
The ones that make the papers and the headlines are the few that we disagree on.
Yeah.
But it's the few, not the many.
Yeah.
And so sometimes we get so engrossed in saying, I've got to become the king of the hill.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And however you define that we pick at the opposition, say, oh, if you elect them, you know what, they're going to have the labor unions take over. You know, which is in the right to...
We have two minutes left in the program. Shireen, I have mentioned with Governor Herbert that he's conservative in policy, moderate in tone, and inclusive in process.
Yeah.
Your comments on that.
Yeah, I mean, you can probably guess my politics aren't aligned with yours, but I have to say...
No, we've got time to work on that.
There's time. I always appreciated... I really did really appreciate your tone and your leadership in the state. Largely, I felt well represented. I felt
respected.
Yeah, and I never, I mean this lovingly, like I didn't ever feel embarrassed by, you know, you. And I think some of what I see on the right now, I just find it hard to swallow. But I really also want to acknowledge the way that you led and talked about immigrants, folks coming to this country, also was a huge value to me. I'm the daughter of an immigrant. And I really appreciate your leadership and tone in that space as well.
Well, it's a state founded by refugees.
Yeah.
And there is a difference between immigration and refugees, but, you know, I think we all understand that we ought to be kind
well,
to each other. I think we do. I mean, if it was a test question, say yes.
Yes.
Should we be kind? Yes.
So, Governor, we've got a minute left. What's your wish? What do you want to happen in politics based on all of your experience? What do we need to do to have a more civil, dignified public square?
This sounds a little hokey, but I wish the country was more like Utah. Mm-hmm. We really are the gold standard in so many ways, and the facts bear that out. We have the most healthy, diverse economy in America. We have a great education system that we don't spend as much money as others do, but we've got much better results by different metrics. The U.S. World News and World Report and others, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, say the best managed state in America and all these different metrics is Utah. So we have a lot of great things going for us, and we ought not to get too puffed up in our pride. We got to stay humble, but we're doing some really good things. And I sleep good at night with all the problems with Washington, D.C., all the problems in the world, Middle East, all the goofy things going on. I sleep good at night because I live in Utah.
That is a wonderful way to end the program. Governor, thank you so much for joining
us. Thank you for being here.
Yeah, Shireen Gorbani, Natalie Gochner, programs produced by Anthony Scoma. Thanks, everybody, for listening.